For July the 5th, 2019, we talk about Super Mario Maker 2, Fallout 76, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 290. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks so much for hopping on, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you to the listeners for listening.
Who are you thanking more right now, Cole?
Oh, don't make me choose. Oh, man. I don't like being forced to choose. No. So before we get into banter stuff, I want to reiterate an announcement. The tickets for Duckfest are available. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckfest, August 31st in Portland, Oregon. $15 flat, no convenience fee or anything like that. Gets you a whole day of podcasting at the Clinton Street Theater. If this works out, I would like to do more of this in different locations and stuff as well. Get different crews in and things. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, duckfeed.tv/duckfest. Be there. Yeah. How's it going, David?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Not sure about this whole weather thing, suddenly deciding to get blazing hot, but I guess that's how it goes.
At least it's not, at least we're not in Europe. Like, they've got it really astoundingly bad, and my understanding is Europe is not air conditioned like all of America is, or most of America.
I can empathize.
Yeah.
With the air conditioning, not the future.
Yeah.
At least when America destroys the environment, we plan ahead for it.
Right. We build it into our literal buildings. We build into our buildings as opposed to building into trees or whatever. It's been a long day. I've been recording for a long time. Sorry. I'm just going to get that out there at the start. Yeah. No. So you're
plus show, not an A minus show.
so you're cooking out there. You're cooking in New York.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
So.
This sounds like a weird thing to say, but it's also hot in Seattle, and it's only because there's no air conditioners, not because it's like the temperature's unreasonable.
It's also like unreasonable. Like, did you guys have, God, this is so much weather talk, but we're all in our 30s. It's fine. no, just that this is something Gary was posting about, like, at least in Portland a couple of weeks ago, it was like 98 degrees or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nuts. It has not gotten that hot. It's gotten to like 80 tops.
Yeah. No.
But 80 with no air conditioner is still 80 degrees.
No. So, and nobody's equipped for it, so everybody's cranky. It's yeah. Not good at all. So I'm sorry you're cooking, David. Sorry you're cooking, Ben.
It's all good.
Yeah. Aside from cooking, Ben, what are you up to?
I'll talk about this. I did a lot of cooking last week because I found out they started selling the Beyond Burger patties at the local grocery store.
Oh shit, really?
So I started making those. They're only 2 for $6, so it was pretty reasonable.
Hmm.
It feels like a burger cooking experience.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was a good time.
Forgive me if I'm not aware. Are you vegetarian or vegan?
I am not. I am veggie-flexible or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
just, yeah.
I don't mind taking like a tofu option if I'm at like a sandwich place or something like that.
No, they can be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like the key part. I think I warmed up to it in Austin because like most of the tofu stuff was prepared really well there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, there's like no downside to switching right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And like a black bean burger can be really good. It's not that you have to be vegetarian in order to eat a Beyond Burger. How's it?
That will judge you if you aren't.
how does it taste? I'm real curious about those.
Yeah, no, it tastes fine. It doesn't taste too dissimilar from a burger. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about it is like how they try and make the presentation very similar to a burger. So they kind of load it with, I think it's canola oil.
mm-hmm.
so that it kind of like bleeds the same way a burger does when you're cooking it, or kind of like leaks out, you know? It does kind of look like ham or Spam when you cook it on one side, if you only do it like lightly. Uh-huh. That's why I think the few times I've had in restaurants before, I think they kind of like cook it really well on both sides so that you can't really see that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it tastes perfectly fine. I don't know. It's a hamburger, so there's a lot of other stuff on it, and that's usually where the flavor is besides the burger.
And that's the thing. Like, bad meat will ruin a burger. Good meat doesn't raise the ceiling very high. The thing that will make a burger or a hot dog, like a vegetarian hot dog.
Clearly never spoken to the Japanese about burgers.
I suppose. In my own experience, the toppings make the burger, you know?
So what is a Beyond Burger made out of?
I could get the out of my recycling and find the ingredients. I think they use like bamboo for part of like the structure of it. Like that's not like the main thing, so that sounds weird. But they use like a lot of like vegetable things like that to try and get like I guess like the structure of it, or make it so that it holds together.
Mm-hmm.
I know they use like beet juice for the thing that's supposed to look like blood. But
do you know what like the actual like protein is?
So
I'm just gonna look it up.
I'm looking at the at their website. Plant-based burger looks, cooks, and satisfies like beef without GMOs. Stop making a big deal out of that, guys. Without soy or gluten. So no soy. That rules out what I expected.
Yeah, because that's the big thing for me is like you know, there's some questionable studies on soy, which is usually my complaint with mystery meats.
Loaded up with that. I don't see what the primary ingredient is. It might literally just be, you know, plant protein.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting to see. Like I've at, you know, Jolly's prompting, I've at various times, you know, experimented a bit with, you know, trying to do some you know, vegetarian meals, but usually I just quickly conclude I do not have the cooking skills for that.
It's a little bit like doing a challenge run for making a meal or ordering a meal. in terms of like, oh yeah, like I just you have to think around a corner that you don't normally do, but like, yeah, it's, you know, plenty of variety of taste there.
Well, I also think like there's a reason that so many animals evolved to eat meat, because it's, you know, just dramatically more protein and particularly calorie dense than plants are.
Yeah, that's a thing. I think about it. Okay, so Ben, do you want to post the say what some of these are? Or
all right, so the first ingredient's water, then pea protein isolate, and then canola oil.
Yeah.
And then rice protein.
Yeah.
See, I feel like canola oil, that's a little weird, but
Yeah,
I noticed that as well, and that's why I mentioned that one comment. I think they do that because they try and make it the experience similar. So, like, when you're cooking the burger, like, it leaks kind of like a regular burger does. Mm-hmm. But
Get, you know, from ye olde canola plant.
Yeah. No, I'm just, you know, I think about this a little bit. You know, I like eating meat. It's fine. Tastes good, whatever. But I like thinking about and at least trying this, because who knows over the next 20 years or within our individual lifespans, how comfortable we're going to have to get with the future of protein, as Beyond Burger calls itself.
Yeah.
So
I feel like my strategy for that is just to try to position myself on the side of the world that gets to keep eating meat.
Which side is that?
The side with more weapons.
Oh, okay.
What?
Jeez.
No, I mean,
it's a grim way to look at the world.
I was about to say, almost literally, a rising tide.
This is like the beginning of 2001: A Space Odyssey. We made this weapon, so we get to keep the meat.
I know. At this point, I've just concluded that humanity is too stupid to survive, mm-hmm. and that most of humanity doesn't actually want to change things. So it's is it Mo the bartender from
The Simpsons?
Simpsons, yeah. Might as well win.
I agree with you in the sense that I think old people don't want to change as much, but old people die and young people grow up and be old.
But they don't anymore.
Old people don't die anymore? Oh, no.
It's like one reverse children of men. Obviously, I don't want, old people to die, but one of my pet theories of, part of what's broken down with the system is that with the aging population, you traditionally had a system where most of the voting bloc was also the people who had the most skin in the game in terms of, establishing themselves, working jobs, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas now you have a much greater amount of voting bloc that, really doesn't care what policies get implemented.
Yeah, I didn't expect us to land somewhere between Hobbes, Malthus, and Nietzsche today, but I guess that's where we're at.
Plant burgers are a real hot button issue, I guess. I was going to add on one thing. I kind of see the burger or the meat industry kind of like the fossil fuel industry, where it's making a plant burger is eventually going to be way cheaper than making a burger. No. And I think at that point, as long as it's socially acceptable, I think at that point it's just going to overtake the burger industry.
I feel like I have a incredibly cynical and incredibly not cynical take on that. The not cynical, I guess, version is I think the big thing that people who are advocates for environmentalism, stuff like that need to do is focus on actually, focus less on being right and more on changing minds.
Mm.
In terms of, making that socially acceptable. And then the more cynical is just that, that's going to, I agree that's going to happen. I'm not certain. I think that's going to be the point at which the cheaper vegetarian burgers are still going to be healthy.
Yeah. Complicated. I don't expect us to solve it today.
I don't think there's a solution.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Oh man. I'm doing fine.
Let's see. That's it? Give us some controversy, Cole.
my cat is prettier than everybody else's pet.
Fair.
Yeah, there we go. No, I just said, and I was looking around the room. She just walked over me to get off of the desk. So, yeah, that's what I thought of.
So, on something that kind of combines our both,
I'm not going to eat my cat.
No, not that. I wasn't going that way. I may joke about setting myself at. Self up as a meat warlord, but I do have limits. On something that kind of combines both topics, I had the shower thought or whatever today of if cats and various carnivores can eat exclusively meat, how do they get carbohydrates? And apparently the answer is that carnivores have completely different nutrient pathways in the body and stuff mm-hmm. like that for how they get their energy, so they just don't need carbohydrates.
Yeah, I mean, they can have them, but that's one of the reasons why you want to, when you're looking for pet food, if you're able to, if you can afford to, look for something that doesn't have any kind of grain in the top ingredients or at all, just because, you know, a lot of it will provide calories, but it is not necessarily metabolized in a way that is beneficial to them. So right. They'll keep on eating, but never actually get satisfied. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think also would raise questions of like, can they, I guess this is, you know, yield like fantasy carnivore races. Could they, drink booze?
I think it's discouraged.
let's not try that one out.
Yeah, and Greta's weird enough without
I said fantasy carnival race. I'm talking like the Iskars of the world or whatever.
Yeah. Oh man, I mean, it's been a while since I thought about the Iskar. Well, yeah, that seems like banter to me. How do you guys feel about getting started? Yeah. A little bit banterish. let's get started. We've got the usual kind of show for you. We're gonna get started with the grind, talk about the things we've been playing, do a free play multiplayer, and then end with some stories that are that have got us jazzed. So let's get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, were you braced for me to misspeak again?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes I go back and listen to episodes that I recorded just a week ago, and I'm like, wow, I forgot all parts of that conversation. Oh, yeah.
you are not alone. It is a common malady. I think the only person who doesn't forget what she says is Jala. She has a very good recall. I think she actually thinks
you
about what she's going.
Say she has total recall.
But she is unique among us, I think, in that she actually pays attention to what she says.
Do you guys
hear
that? I heard a table flip in the distance after that joke.
Yeah, that'd be a facepalm, not a table flip. So I just randomly, David, what you been playing?
I've been continuing to play the Fallouts.
Ooh, well, Fallout 76.
One Fallout, but so been continuing on Fallout 76. These sorts of games are always super hard to talk about because, you know, by definition, open world games tend to revolve more around just the day, you know, moment to moment, as opposed to, you know, set pieces or something like that.
Yeah, there's no like common path that somebody is going to follow and get these and get those moments.
Right. Exactly. So I guess I'm level 42 out of 50.
Okay.
To kind of give some indication of where I am in the progression. Mm-hmm. Part of that's because for the about half the time I've been playing so far has been during a double XP event. So that tends to really help with you kind of upping your character level.
Seems
how often do they have those?
Seems like not real often, but they had one for when they basically announced the Battle
Forgiveness
Royale mode.
Tour.
the Forgiveness Tour. Let's see. Other than that, I've actually finally gone a little bit back to following the main storyline and finally got into a compelling quest. Basically, I'm currently running errands for a robot, like one of the Mr. Handy, I guess whatever the female Mr. Handys are called. Miss Handys?
Miss Handys sounds suspect.
Yeah.
No.
True. But basically, one of those set themselves up as the leader of the Raiders. all of the Raiders are currently dead because, again, no humans, but she's sending me around to research what their tactics were.
Okay.
So that, once they come back, she can, successfully lead. So far I got a mission to basically, modify a syringe gun with, to deliver a, basically drugs. So I had to use it to drug up a bear, which made it super, super dangerous. So you then have to then wait until it, comes down off the high and crashes, mm-hmm. and then take advantage.
Okay.
now she's having me, build, explosive meat in order to, act as a bait trap for enemies.
Okay. this is some Fallout 2 style stuff. This is great.
Yeah, exactly. So it like finally remembered to be funny and silly and interesting again.
Mm-hmm.
I especially like the design of this robot. It has like hunks of metal scrap welded to the top of kind of the dome, of the design in order to give it a spiky mohawk.
Okay. And
it apparently is a heavy drug user, which I'm not sure how that works for a robot.
Okay.
But like the, the Mr. Handy robots, I guess for people who haven't played much or don't remember or whatever, are basically floating spheres with a jet on the bottom that allows them to float, and then several robotic arms with various attachments.
They look like the interrogation droid from Star Wars A New Hope.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And are similarly armed with, like, drills and buzz saws and whatnot.
However, housework.
Yeah, as you do. However, this one instead has, on the ends of arms, like, syringes and, like, an inhaler and stuff like that.
Nice.
Which is just ridiculous. But, other than that, I've seen the Mothman twice.
Cool.
So that's been kind of interesting. I haven't managed to take him down yet. When I shot him, he just kind of like rocketed up into the sky and disappeared. So
just shine a light at him, then he'll come and fight you.
Yeah.
Ah, that could be. Yeah, that could be. So yeah, so I have no idea where that's going. Also, apparently, there's some sort of Mothman cult going on.
Hmm.
That's just a thing, which, again, is in the category of, like, I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah, no, this all sounds really good. Like, that kind of a bit of a 180 from what you were describing before.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's very much, it still has its problems, but also kind of has its moments. One element I do kind of like, I feel like one of the things that makes the Fallout series compelling is, some of their, I guess, like social commentary, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I think this one's tended to be a little weak in that respect, largely because, like, everyone that could potentially be a foil or, a villain or whatever is dead.
Or portray a point of view. Yeah.
Right, exactly. However, I do feel like one thing, and I don't know if this is, intentional or if I'm reading too much into it or whatever, but one angle that they kind of comes out in some of the audio logs, which I haven't really seen in previous games, I think is interesting, is, since this takes place just 25 years after the bombs fell, it's a lot of the story with the bandit gangs, it revolves around, kind of how they formed and, what led people to, to form these gangs and kind of how the remnants of society dealt with them, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kind of interesting dynamics is both when you're reading kind of some of the audio logs of some of the people that have decided to join these gangs, and then even when you're reading some of the like responders, sort of this game's equivalent of the Minuteman,
mm-hmm.
In kind of their analysis of it, there's sometimes a thread of, I guess, a very like non-judgmental approach to like a lot of the people are basically just people that couldn't deal with society having collapsed.
Okay.
And, the retreated to just self-destructive behavior.
Yeah.
And so, it's kind of an interesting angle of, there seems to, in some cases, almost be an understanding of, like, for certain people, maybe just, like, going off and spending the rest of their time, using as many chems as possible is, mm-hmm. like, was actually an explicit choice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does benefit from being closer to the incident like that.
Yeah. So that's, something that's kind of an interesting, dynamic to that. So I don't know if it'll go anywhere or what, but yeah, that's, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than that, starting to get sort of to end game. I've got a full set of power armor. In my case, I'm going with a industrial version, so it's designed for mining as opposed to combat. So it doesn't protect nearly as much, but mm-hmm. dramatically increases my how much I can carry.
Okay.
The other thing that's fun is I'm starting to spec into the mutations.
Okay.
So one of the things they added is when you get exposed to radiation, the more you get exposed, you have a chance of developing various mutations. And they have a benefit and then also a drawback.
Yeah.
And then as you heal the radiation poisoning, you have a chance to recover from them.
Mm-hmm.
However, you in the luck tree are various perks that both remove the chance of them healing and then also dramatically lessen the negative consequences.
Okay.
And so these really range, some of them are fairly just straight up stats, but some of them are much more over the top. So you can get the ability to like have chameleon skin and just instantly cloak when you stop moving.
Okay.
Which is kind of fun. However, the drawback is it doesn't work if you're wearing any armor. So it's,
like straight up Invisible Man style.
Right. Yeah. So it's build, or so it's potentially viable, but only if you're doing a strictly stealth build.
Yeah, extreme stealth. Yeah.
A streaker stealth build.
Yeah. As you do. It's the wasteland.
You're gonna play this game like a pervert.
But probably my favorite is I'm currently mutated and have become a marsupial.
So you have a pouch as an extra inventory space?
Yes. So that's a practical thing is extra inventory space at the expense of intelligence.
Oh.
However, the much more entertaining aspect of it is it also at least doubles your jump height.
Okay.
So you're basically now playing the game as a superhero.
Oh, getting back to that City of Heroes jump power.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it actually, it's a lot of fun just because like always jumping is fun, but it's also fun because it allows you in a way that's a lot of fun, but not too overpowered to kind of cheat. So, you know, again, this being, you know, right after the bombs fell, you know, very focused on kind of the survivalist things.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, and I guess also being set in more a rural environment, mm-hmm. as opposed to the cities, a lot of the dungeons, quote unquote, are, you know, actually outdoors and more barricades as opposed to, you know, the innards of a facility.
Right.
And, you know, they, you know, definitely accounted for people attacking on foot, but they did not account for my superhero identity, Marsupion, to simply jump over their walls and, you know, start sniping them.
Zoip. Yeah.
So, stuff like that, it's a lot of fun. Unfortunately, the equivalent in the Battle Royale mode is apparently blatantly overpowered because it just gives you the ability to straight up, like, hop over people and, like, shoot down.
Huh.
It's, you know, imagine if you combined bunny hopping with like City of Heroes movement powers.
Yeah, that's really good.
It makes me think of the in Morrowind when you like get the 100 like athletics early on in the game hack and you can just jump around as a cat the entire time. It's great. Yep.
Exactly.
Or supercharge yourself with hacked potions and jump high enough that you crash the game.
Yeah, I think so I was thinking, you know, one of my like modus operandis is I always think of the answers to multiplayer questions you know, after we actually ask them.
Uh-huh.
So I'm pretty sure we've had some for like what's your favorite items. I think the Boots of Blinding Speed from
it's Morrowind.
Was that Oblivion or
that's
Morrowind?
Yeah, Morrowind.
Yes, where it makes you super fast but you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, that was just kind of off topic, but yeah. It does very much feel like that sort of thing.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like you're having fun.
Yeah, definitely am.
Yeah. Did you have anything else?
No, that's been about it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I only got one thing, but it's okay. A pretty sizable thing. I've continued playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Since I was on call over the weekend, I was like in my apartment all weekend, so I just played the shit out of that game, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
It's slightly more mindful fun. It's not as completely mindless fun as it was last week.
Right.
They introduced a mechanic that's similar to like gang territories in Grand Theft Auto, as far as like areas that you're exploring. So that's a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a lot of go to this place, find three things, assassinate everyone there, and then leave and go to the next place.
Yeah.
The like territory control is a little bit interesting because they kind of have like a meter, and they introduce a mechanic where it's like every place you go, you're trying to like destabilize an area. And there's only two different people that can control it, the Athens and the Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
And so by like either killing high profile people or destroying like military munitions or stealing money from their treasuries or whatever, you're like slowly destabilizing the area, I guess, similar to Far Cry. So it's still like a Far Cry game.
Yeah.
And then maybe the difference between this and a Far Cry game is once it gets to a low enough point, then I think this is something that David was alluding to last week, is you can do this kind of like giant battle to fight for control of the region.
Okay.
And you can pick which side you're on, so you can destabilize a region and then fight for the side that you just destabilized if you want. But the way they try and incentivize it is whoever's attacking, you get two pieces of epic armor, as they claim. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are the defending team, then you only get one piece. So kind of for some reason, incentivizes you for all, just flipping regions back and forth.
I think it's supposed to be more difficult to attack than defend, supposedly.
Yeah, I think that kind of rings true. I tried to... So there's one time that they force you to do this in the story, and then after that, it's kind of like, do it if you want to. So I tried to do it once on my own, and I was... Yeah, I tried to flip a region, and I was still alive. I was doing fine. I was killing people. It was great. But all the people on my team died, so I guess I lost the battle.
They let you down.
Yeah, I think it's like a numbers game. So the next time I try it, you just got to kill all the small, weak people a bunch so that you just get the numbers right. You know, then your people are like two on their one big dude, and then you can kill them that way. But anyway, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the one problem I had with the system, and this is like purely not a game problem, but it's like, because history, I know how this war ends, so it's kind of like,
you don't want to get too invested.
I actually don't know who won the war between them. I won't look it up because I don't want to spoil it for myself.
The weird definitions of spoilers.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, at more than 1,000 years, have we passed the statute of limitations for spoilers?
It's still a spoiler, man.
It's still a spoiler to me.
But yeah, outside of that, like, there's still good, like, world exploring going on. It is, like, I feel like it's getting more and more open in terms of there's just a giant world. It's kind of broken into sections. So, like, each area that I'm talking about that you can flip or whatever is kind of, like, a section of the world. There's probably like somewhere between like 20 and 30 different sections, and they kind of indicate what level you should be if you want to go there. So that's kind of nice. It kind of gives you kind of a guide of like, oh, okay, I can check out this region now. I think I should be fine enough, and I'm not going to go to the top right corner because I'm way too underleveled for that. But there's some cool parts. They have like secret areas. They have like caves you can explore. They have like these like temples that you can explore that are kind of cool. Where, like, I knocked down, like, a wall that you didn't really indicate that, like, it was, like, a wall that you can knock down. But, like, there's, like, things like that are kind of cool surprises that are baked into it. I don't know. It's like, a pretty fun world to explore right now, though.
Have you found the little girl that wants you to... find like pearls and gemstones?
I'll say no because I haven't met a little girl, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's when you get that quest, you should definitely do it. I take no responsibility for saying you should definitely do it.
Okay. They have similar mechanics to Black Flag, where like they have like shipwrecks, and you can. That's something that's, I guess, new since last week I played, is I've unlocked a ship that I can sail around in. So all that like great content that they added in Black Flag is still maintained in this game. Like you can do ship battles if you want. They have like shipwrecks, so you can dive down underwater. It's a pretty good game. They did not focus on realism at all, and I think that is benefiting them.
Sounds like it.
So yeah. One mechanic I haven't figured out, I'm kind of interested to see, actually two related mechanics. If you had been able to make heads or tails of it, a bunch of the like just random throwaway quests that, you know, the procedurally generated ones, periodically when you complete them, you'll have the opportunity to invite the quest giver to join you, like join your crew. But the thing is, like, 90% of the time the quest giver is like a prostitute, and like the other 20% it's like a philosopher. And so they're just blatantly incompetent at being a sailor. So I have no idea why you can do that.
They can learn, right? Anyone can learn to do better at things. I don't know.
Yeah.
it is a weird crew.
Well, and then the other thing is with those quests, you'll periodically, when you start, you'll get something where they'll kind of explain the situation and you can... You know, you'll either be like, oh, you want me to do this? Or, oh, you want me to do this other thing? So it'll be like, I don't know, they'll say like, hey, bandits stole my stuff and I can't get it back because of, you know, wolves. And you can either say like, oh, you want me to kill the wolves or, oh, you want me to kill the bandits? But then most of the time they'll just be like, no, I want you to do the other thing. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I noticed that too. There's a, I can't remember if they've had like dialogue systems in the past, Assassin's Creed or not. I guess they had two of them, maybe. I don't know. In any case, they're trying to have a dialogue system in this game. But yeah, there's a couple points where there's like one time where our character is like, you can trust me with this information. And like, I did the option that's supposed to like, no, I don't trust you. And then like, he's like, nah, you can trust me. And you just tell him anyway. And it's like, oh, okay. There's not actually a choice here.
Yeah.
But.
But the best.
Oh, well. It's still, I mean, it's still a fun story so far. The main arc of the story does seem interesting. Like they've done a good job of like at least building a little bit of intrigue with like the first, I don't know, whatever percentage of the way through the game I am. But yeah, and then like I looked up the time it takes to beat it. It claims that it's 40 hours, but I've probably sunk like 15 to 20 in it already, and I feel like I'm nowhere close to being towards the end. So it's a very sizable game.
40 hours would have to be if you were doing straight up critical path.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so in that sense, I think it's a very good value game because I think that I'm going to get a lot of gameplay out of it. And I think I got it for like $30. And I know you can get it on Steam right now for about that price too while the summer sale is going on. So
I need to look at that.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy about that at least. Yeah. And it seems to be fun. There's also like they've kind of hinted at different boss battles, but I think you're capped off. Like you have to be a certain level to be able to do them. So like that's interesting as well. Like they do a good job like foreshadowing like places that you'll go and stuff like that. So
yeah, I know the hunting boss battles are actually surprisingly challenging.
I can believe that. Yeah. That is one path so far that I've kind of like not upgraded a whole bunch on. I did use the mechanic where you can like respec your skills too, and basically took things out of hunting and put them into warrior and stealth. So yeah,
from what I've found, hunting is really powerful if you, every time you use an ability. You get a little bit of adrenaline, and then there's a ability that in hunting where your adrenaline meter will fill up to the next like pip. And so if you spec entirely in the like one ability that's just fully on spike damage, you can just like stealth and just like shoot people and watch them fly like 30 feet and then wait for things to regenerate.
Yeah, so that is one thing about this game is the AI is like super dumb, but I think it's intentionally designed that way so that it's also a fun game to play still. Like the one thing that's nice is like, okay, so say you trigger a surprise from somebody on one side of a fort that you're trying to clear. If there's no one else around besides that person, they are going to be the only person who knows where you are. So you can just straight up fight them and kill them, and then you're still in like stealth mode. You know, like you don't have to like start over the entire base. So it's not like Hitman or anything like that.
Yeah.
That is nice. That is a nice mechanic. It is very forgiving in that sense. But they still make it like a little bit interesting though. They have like the forts have this thing where it's like a. I think it's like a torch type signal where it's like a giant hay bale at the top of the fort. And if somebody lights that on fire, then reinforcements will come. And so you have to deal with more people. So even though like you can fight people kind of in the open and there's not like a huge penalty for it, you can't alert everybody to your presence. Otherwise it gets worse and worse. So.
Yeah. I think my favorite in terms of just dumb AI on that is there's one of the military bases that is on the edge of a massive cliff. And so I proceed to like kick someone off. And then one of the guys would like notice and go over to look. And so I kicked him off, and then that just continued. Yeah,
no, this is your life now.
The entire camp.
That's really good.
Yeah, there's a weird behavior where when you kill someone, or like, yeah, they have a mechanic similar to Shadow and Mordor where you can recruit people, you can impress people onto your ship. But whenever you do that, the way they have like the patrol routes or something, they try and kind of like average it. So somebody else will come over and take that position exactly where the person that you just took out was. And so it's like, okay, well, now I'll take this guy out then, because now he's by himself in the same spot. And you can do this like 3 or 4 times, and then that area is more or less cleared. So it's kind of a bizarre stealth system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a good game. I'm going to continue to play it. I'm pretty happy with it. It's going to tide me over until October when Outer Worlds comes out. So
nice.
Oh, Outer Worlds looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm real looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that all for you, Ben?
Yep.
Yeah. I've got two. The first one is Super Mario Maker 2.
Hey.
Yeah.
Are you playing it fun mode, or are you playing it challenge mode?
What is the difference?
Because the only thing I've seen of this game is people on Twitch play it, and they play like the ridiculously hard levels. It's like playing it Dark Souls level.
No, they're definitely a series of kind of just ROM hell or kind of Kaizo kind of levels that are just, yeah, this is designed to fuck you. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I'm just kind of playing stuff that's on the top, and it is a good mixture of all of those kind of things. Okay. Man, people who play these games are really creative. Yeah, just really good stuff. And like the overall experience, you know, like the move set, like on the surface is not, you know, substantially different than the first Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. However, the addition of sloped floors and the addition of kind of specifically kind of better pipe routing and secret areas allows for a lot more to be done with it. In a way that is like, it gives me like strong vibes of like the Little Big Planet community, okay, to a certain extent. Like,
wasn't there something weird with the previous game that kind of explicitly undermined secret areas?
I mean, the camera would always follow you, and in this one, you can actually set it and say, "Yeah, like don't follow my dude over this way." If you can, yeah. So that is something that the creator can declare. That's all that I've really gleaned from doing a little bit of diving in and playing just random levels with Japanese names. Really, really, really cool, fun, challenging stuff. You know, a lot of haunted house levels are possible now in a way that necessarily weren't there before. So, you know, fun Mario adventure puzzle kind of deals. Good stuff. The single player ain't half bad either, actually. So the conceit of this is that you are Mario, and the game begins with you having just led a team to build a new Mushroom Kingdom castle. And then the undo dog, because this pulls in a bunch of Mario Paint imagery, which I adore to the bottom of my heart, the undo dog gets excited and he accidentally activates the rocket that is the complete, you know, the wipe and start over. And so the castle goes away and it's like, oh no, this is a disaster. Mario, we need you to secure funding for this new project. Sorry, Greta. And what you have to do is you talk to a particular Toad and he says, all right, here are levels that are coming in and you get paid to play them. And you can select them based on like the bounty that they will give you, or the, you know, based on the description or the difficulty is rated in stars or coins or something like that. These are Nintendo manufactured levels. I don't know if eventually you can just use this to filter up, user made levels without going into the user generated content interface. I have no idea what the end game for this looks like, but again, just the variety of levels that you can play as, it's a little bit like getting challenge levels from four different Mario games. Let me see here. Four. Mario 1, Mario 3, Mario World, New Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3D World. Yeah, five. So you're just kind of spinning the wheel and playing a fun, inventive Nintendo-designed level with the look and moveset of any one of five Mario games.
That's pretty sweet.
The only way it could be better is if those fucking cowards added Super Mario Brothers 2. It is about time. Make it DLC, and I will respect you again.
Have they explicitly not included? I mean, obviously, you know, it's not there, but something where they've had some sort of pushback, or is it just they haven't done it?
I don't know that anybody's agitating for this. Like it's not become an issue in the community. It is just my bugbear. Possibly there may be millions of others suffering in silence, and I'm the only one brave enough to talk. But yeah.
That one wasn't canonically a Mario game or something.
No. I mean, it was a Doki Doki Panic, and then they made it Mario for the American audience. Yeah, no, I just you can do cool stuff in the Mario 2 engine, and like the different characters make a big difference, and you know, picking stuff up and throwing it. And I don't know, I want to play a Mario game with Shy Guys. That seems to be really important to the overall deal. I don't know. I'm tilting at this windmill, and it's funny to call people cowards, so I'm just going to keep doing it. But it would be nice, you know. I saw,
maybe that'll be DLC.
Who knows? Maybe. I mean, even just the tile sets, that would be good. I saw it's like a secret power-up or something, but you can put the Super Ball into the world. Did either of you guys play Super Mario Land on the Game Boy?
I did not.
That wasn't the six golden coins, not that one.
It was the one before that. It's a very strange Mario game. Like half the levels are weird little shoot 'em ups where you're in either a submarine or a space station or a spaceship rather. Instead of having your regular fireball that does the, you know, little bounce, you know, repeated kind of sine wave kind of thing, instead of having that, you have a super ball that you throw down onto the ground, and then it ricochets up at a 45 degree angle, and it will keep doing 45 degree ricochets. So like a lot of the game is about nailing coins by throwing that. Well, apparently they found they included that in this game, so you can just straight up have that obscure ass power from a game that, you know, not a lot of people today remember fondly. But hey, because this is a big love letter to Mario Paint and to Mario history, let's just throw it in. It'll be good, while also ignoring Super Mario Brothers 2, like complete just spineless lizards that we are.
I have to say, though, I think now that I think of it, six golden coins or whatever would be the one I would want. Like, that's probably my, optimal Mario. Got to get those bunny ears.
Six golden coins is really good. Yeah. I like that game quite a bit. I don't have an awful lot more to say about Super Mario Maker, just because, you know, I haven't really encountered what I feel is a god tier custom level. Those are going to come as people learn the engine or what have you. So, you know, as I continue dallying with this, if I get a good story, I'll bring it back. But yeah, Super Mario Maker is thumbs up.
Excuse me. No, that's literally me yawning, not like...
No, you weren't yawning. It was not a yawn with a message.
is there any degree, can you mix and match the Mario stuff? Could you use the tile set from one game, but power sets from or power ups from another one or anything like that?
No, it seems pretty... it seems to be locked into a lane. There are a couple of items that are kind of transplants from one that will go to the other. So like Super Mario Maker 2 adds the Angry Sun, which is great because I love the Angry Sun from Super Mario Brothers 3, the one that chases you in the desert. I need to get that because I have a painted wood cutout of the Phantom Mask from Super Mario Brothers 2, which is being forgotten by Nintendo, I think intentionally to slight me at this point. I want to like contract the same people who made this Phantom Mask and make me an angry sun. So that way my office wall can just have angry Mario things that will chase me. But that can be brought in to different tile sets too. So it just depends. See, but like you can't like do the wall grab as NES Mario.
Oh, okay.
As far as I can tell, it may be something I just haven't encountered.
So that was something specifically the Angry Sun always kind of bothered me because like from a canonical standpoint, what are we saying? Like has Mario just pissed off all of nature? Like the laws of the cosmos are out to get him now?
I mean, he eats stars. Like that's some Cthulhu stuff.
I just wish the lighting changed when the sun moved around.
I mean, I always thought that it wasn't the sun, just something pretending to be the sun.
I feel like that's even weirder. Like, how did he not notice?
Oh, it's good. It's a good game. Great fit on the Switch as well. It feels weird and profane to touch the screen of my Switch. I forget it's a thing.
I generally think that is weird and profane.
it's not something any game ever really asked me to do. But yeah, no, you're doing that to like drop. You can do that to drop tiles and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions about Super Mario Maker 2?
Nope.
Okay. The only other thing I've been playing is more Final Fantasy Adventure. Continues to be a really good game. I recommend, the collection of mana is expensive. Like it's quite frankly kind of insulting what Square is asking for it. But I was weak and I wanted to play this game real bad. So it's, wait for it to go on sale, etc. down the line. But like, man, this is a fun game that I don't see a lot of people talking about. I mentioned it last week, but there is something new that I want to bring up. The variety of weapons that you can get a hold of is actually really good. So it's not just like a sword like Link has or what have you, but like you get spears and you get axes, and they have different utilities like for destroying particular things in the environment, as well as different enemies are weak to different things. And one of the main systems that complicates combat is you have a willpower bar. It stops you from ordering a pizza. No, yeah. that charges up while you're not attacking or casting spells. When it's full and you do an attack, you do like a super attack, like and throw your weapon across the screen, and it does more damage. So like you can spec to have really fast willpower recovery. And, instead of spamming attacks, you can play at range and just wait for these supercharge attacks to go while you're up there. Mm. I think that is just like a super neat way to vary the pace of combat in an otherwise very simple game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's good. Music is good, too.
Sound kind of cool.
I've got it stuck in my head.
Now I'm going to look up how much they're asking for this.
It's $40, which is all a right. lot.
Is it not on Steam sale?
No, it's on Switch only, I believe.
Huh.
Yeah, it also came out very recently, so it would not necessarily be on sale just yet. Yep, it's on Switch. I believe it is only on Switch. So, three games, one of which has never been officially released in America. Like, I can kind of see what they're saying, but it's a lot for a retro compilation like that, so... Yeah. Any questions about Final Fantasy Adventure?
Someone should make a website of time to beat divided by going rate for the price of it to try and get a value out of any sort of game.
I don't like that.
No?
No.
Think it goes to bad places where people inflate the length of their game?
Yeah, I think that if that becomes like a standardized metric, you're going to get a lot of... I think it is like season 4 of The Wire is bad metrics leading to bad incentives.
Oh, maybe we can add like votes for part of the or whatever. All right. Yeah.
How do you guys feel about doing multiplayer?
Let's do it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it usually. However, this time it is a free play multiplayer and you ask us the questions, baby. It's a flip flop. So I'm going to proctor this. We only have a handful of responses, but it's a you know, holiday week, so it can be a little bit shorter. That is fine. Steven asks, what you drinking? Ben.
I am drinking carbonated water with real lime juice in it.
Ace. That is good. You can regulate how much lime juice gets in it. So It actually tastes like lime. Good poll. How about you, David?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Yeah.
Dry casting, huh?
You know, that's why I'm not as funny this time around.
I finished up literally just a couple of minutes ago a Great Lake Burning River Pale Ale, just the one for tonight, and I have switched to a bottle of water. So
I'm going to switch to a Rogue Dead Guy Ale, I think, after our next podcast break.
Nice.
Because now I'm like, we need to have a looser podcast. just talking about vegan burgers all the time.
I know, right? You're not real uptight. Ollie says, so sometimes TV shows or movies or what have you get turned into cheap cash grab games, Crazy Frog Racer being an example. So what meme/vine/random media thing do you think could make a decent cash in, and what would that game be?
First one that came to mind, I don't know how good it would be, but what about a prestige type game, the movie The Prestige? I'm going to give away the ending, so spoiler alert, skip ahead if you don't want to hear this. Where you do some sort of battle royale where you do like a 50-50 where you got to like fight off your clone to try and like become a better magician. So it's like a half chance you die, half chance you get to a sweeter spot, and make that like the core mechanic for a game.
Yeah. I like that.
Do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like changing the definition of victory in that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of the recent meme that is me and the boys with the image of the villains from the Spider-Man 70s cartoon, kind of making weird smiles, standing in a row. What I want to do is is do like a single screen adventure game similar to that one game. It was like based on the MacGruber sketches where you're looking for the bomb in every screen. And I always forget what that fucking game is called. MacPixel, similar to MacPixel. but the boys being Rhino, Vulture, Electro, and I forget who the fourth one is. Green Goblin. Like they are in a situation, but one thing is wrong and they're not smiling. And like, maybe you put beer in the cooler, then they're smiling and you get points. So it'd be like WarioWare, but it is you making the boys happy is what I would like.
That is very centered around that meme.
Yeah. Ollie said memes. How about you, David?
Ah, mm-hmm. Man, I have no idea.
This is why you got to read the questions ahead of time.
Yeah, apparently. Most of the memes I like already come from video games, so I'm not quite sure how that works.
Picture like a challenge mode spinoff of a video game based meme.
So I think by far my favorite video game based memes are just the like Gremlin Diva stuff from Overwatch. I have no idea how that would be translated to a game other than just playing a lot of StarCraft.
Don't know.
But yeah, sorry, I got nothing. This will definitely be a I'll come up with a good answer someday.
There's a term for that, or meme for it, if you will. It's called staircase wit.
Oh yeah,
yes,
based on a French term, esprit d'escalier. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also known as the jerk store phenomenon.
Wait, what's the? Oh,
yeah, okay. Seinfeld. Yeah. When George's boss zings him.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, he's the ocean called. They want they said stop eating so much shrimp. The jerk store called. They're running out of you. Yeah. let's see here. Lucas says, what is the genre of game you just don't gel with? Follow up, what would a game of that genre need to have in order for you to get into it?
I got one for this.
Okay.
Real-time strategy is usually harder for me to get into because I get really stressed out if I can't like pause and think about the decision. So adding a pause button works. And so a lot of games have done this, actually. So, like, Frostpunk has this, you know?
Yeah.
Where you can, like, pause the game, think about your decision, and then make a choice. And so that makes it a lot easier for me to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Mine will be similar because this is a problem that's solved, but not a lot of them do it. Fighting games are really hard for me to get into. They're just a bad value proposition for, like, a home purchase. The game that has most gotten around this and the thing that I think can do it is to have a really good story mode where the matchups are determined and they are meant to teach you something about both of those characters through mechanics.
What game are you thinking of in particular?
Sorry, I should have said that as opposed to just saying the 2009 Mortal Kombat game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. Mortal Kombat 9 or whatever it was. I had a really good story mode that I played all the way through. It is, yeah. That was the way to get through it, to get me invested. David, how about you?
So, fighting games would rank up there for me. Ironically, I think fighting games, I think racing games or sports games, and I think mm-hmm. all of those would be made better by converting them to some sort of like MMO format.
Okay.
Where I was leveling up and, you know, building my character, and there was, you know, some sort of, you know, overarching like overworld or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, giving context to the action as opposed to selecting the challenge off of a menu.
Right, exactly. So I guess I think like if Burnout Paradise, like if that you know, kind of model was applied more widely,
yeah.
I think that'd be good.
Makes sense. Yeah. Jonathan says, what is the strangest thing in your podcasting area?
I'll go with, I have 3 Wi-Fi antennas that should be on my computer but aren't, and they're just sitting out. Well, I don't need them anymore because I have a wired in internet connection.
Yeah,
so they're just sitting on my desk.
Yeah, you know. Let's see, for me it is the prettiest cat in the world.
Oh,
she's sitting right by my leg right now.
Oh,
I feel like what's really strange about that is the fact that she's not sitting on your keyboard or something.
She hasn't done that so much since I spayed her. Well, since I had her spayed. Sorry.
Just don't teach you for getting on the keyboard, Greta.
Yeah, no, the wording on that matters, actually. No, she's posted like a guard kitty by my foot, watching the door for intruders or spiders. How about you, David?
Strangely enough, I recently built a what's called like a Tetsubtaba, something like that. I don't speak Japanese. It's basically a like metal brush that's used for like in martial arts for body conditioning. So you basically like hit yourself with it.
Intense.
To like strengthen the muscles and bones. So yeah, that's the weirdest thing I have lying around.
You're tenderizing yourself.
Yeah, you know.
it's the
whole, you know, you can't beat me up if I beat me up.
Let's see here. Greg writes, what's a game you really like that no one else seems to? I'll throw in for Silent Hill 4. And I talk about that a lot, but it's the only honest answer I can give.
I think I give this answer for a lot of things as well, but I'll go with Star Wars: The Clone Wars, the game that came with like the original Xbox type game.
Oh,
had a lot of really good multiplayer variants in it because it was a pandemic game.
Oh yeah. David?
I feel like definitely my default like answer is without a doubt Army of Two.
Okay.
The second one.
So second one or the first one, I don't know. Probably the second one. Just for that one having the weirder ending and better gun customization.
And also probably more people dislike it.
Oh, do they?
I think so. That's the one with more insensitive jokes, right?
People dislike both of them quite a great deal.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of something like more witty that I don't say all the time. But yeah, that's probably mine if I'm being honest.
Easy enough. Let's see here. Michael Kavanaugh, what was the last movie you guys enjoyed or didn't? My very broad. mine isn't Battle Angel this time. I rewatched The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I watched it about once a year with my dad. Good, the Bad, nice. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is really good. I saw I saw A Fistful of Dollars playing on cable at my parents' house, and I was like, fuck yeah. Like, I would sit down and watch this.
See, that is a genre I would love to see like brought into games.
Yeah, it'll relate a little bit to the next one here, but yeah, more Western stuff.
One particularly like the spaghetti Western. Yes. Like I don't need any more deconstructions of the Western genre. I need to be out for revenge.
Straight up in the middle. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So David, how about you? A recent movie you've seen that left a strong impression on you?
Sure. I really enjoyed Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Just really good movie. A lot of fun. Also kind of fun. I was visiting back in with my friends in Huntsville, Alabama, where I used to work. When we went and saw it, so when Nick Fury says that his hometown is Huntsville, Alabama, you can imagine the
people losing their minds.
Was enthused.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Captain Marvel. How about you, Ben?
I saw Interstellar, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. They were reshowing it in one of the theaters downtown in Seattle. That's like a giant theater and has really loud sound and stuff like that. And it was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love that 4D scene.
Which one?
The 4D scene.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
I just remember my memory of that movie in just in terms of being, you know, incredibly nerdy is I went and saw that with people from when I was in college for computer science. And so we immediately get to the end and start doing like back of the
envelope.
Thank you. Back of the envelope calculations for like how long it would take to transmit that much data, how many decades it would take via
Morse code.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it's a little while. I also thought about that too. He had to have like gone, well, they didn't show this, but he would have had to gone to every instance of where that watch was and move the hand back and forth to try and transmit that code. I think. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a very tenacious dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, we're going to be talking about this. There's an appendix episode of Bonfireside Chat coming out. But this is the last movie that I saw, The Blade of the Immortal.
I know I've heard of that.
Yeah. Before. So it is a Japanese film directed by Takashi Miike, who's kind of known for directing really gory, exploitative kind of things. It is a samurai movie that is based on, a manga of the same name. The reason we're covering it on Bonfireside Chat is because Blade of the Immortal is cited as an inspiration for Sekiro. So you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, let's watch it and see what we can pull. Weirdly, that has more in common with Bloodborne. but regardless, it was a good watch. So like the kind of the conceit is, main character is the samurai who cannot die because an ancient nun infected him with bloodworms that kind of reconstruct him. And so like,
as bloodworms do.
Yeah. Like, he just like in the like one of the opening scenes, or when he gets it, like his hand is cut off, and then like a bunch of worms like shoot out of the stump and grab the hand and like fuse it back on. And so like with all of that, you know, you would think, okay, like this is going to be just like a weird samurai kind of movie, and it is, but there's almost like a Western kind of feel to it too, because the structure of the story is that a young girl hires him to help with her revenge quest. So it's a little bit like True Grit, actually. And it is incredibly over the top and gory, and the action is good, and it's like a series of boss fights, and it's kind of exactly what I wanted to see at that time. So yeah, Blade of the Immortal. Not for the weak of stomach, but it is lighthearted and fun in some regards, in that it is just incredibly goofy while being very oppressive.
That sounds sweet.
I really need to watch more of the like old samurai like anime and, you know, movies and stuff.
Yeah, I this may just be one of those things where, like, you know, it was a good example that spoke to my sensibilities, and it, you know, inspired a thing that I like, you know, in Sekiro and Bloodborne and stuff like that. But yeah, it landed really well. Listen to Bonfireside Chat for more. And then finally here, Alexander writes two. So there are two here, one mostly for me, and then we can hit the other one here. So Alexander says, Cole and everyone else, but mostly Cole, if you could develop an official Dark Tower video game, what would it be like? Telltale style story thing, CRPG, Immortal Unchained, but with more cowboys. Remember, he who does not develop a worthy Dark Tower game has forgotten the face of his father. Yeah, I would like for it to be a CRPG. I would like for it to be, you know, something along the lines of a, you know, like a Mass Effect, almost, kind of. Like, you get the best of both worlds, because you do have to have the combat, but I want to be able to, you know, ask about the world and learn about things. So yeah, let's say a CRPG more in the line of a Mass Effect than a Planescape, just because the action needs to factor in a little bit more. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
So I've not read the series, so, you know, this is just kind of my, you know, from you and Dennis gushing about, but from what I've heard, it sounds like it would be perfect for like from Software type, you know, a Soulsborne type of thing.
A little bit, yeah. It is a little bit more talky than those tend to be.
Sure.
Yes.
But isn't there a lot of similarities in terms of kind of setting and like aesthetics?
To a degree, yeah. There is a hopelessness. I mean, kind of like a common refrain, because at least in one of the worlds in which it takes place, you know, the common refrain is the world has moved on. Just, you know, it is like the Dark Souls series, in that the broader cosmology is that the world is kind of winding down, you know, things are falling apart. Things are getting, you know, just weak, swimmy in terms of time and space and things. Yeah.
That would fit. As time and space do.
Entropy. And then the other one here, that one's been done. As games as a service becomes more common, I foresee a time when most, if not all, of the games being made are not, quote, for me anymore. Could you all see a day when you retire from non-indie games? What would bring that about for you?
I think since games are mostly like built out of people who are really passionate about it, I think there's always going to be at least some games that are like not trying to grab as much money as possible.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's like a weird thing where it's now like a hybrid industry, and it's like two different industries that are still under the same umbrella, where it's like some people are doing it very much for profit, and that's like the main motivator, while like, even like, I don't know, like, we're Assassin's Creed Odyssey is like the most recent example, where it's like, you know, it's not like an artistic game or anything like that, but it's a very sizable game, you know, like, and so it's a better value proposition. That said, they also have like mechanics in it where it's like, oh, buy this online currency if you want, yeah, whatever.
but pay us $10 and you can level twice as fast.
Exactly. No. But my PS4 is not connected to the internet, and I think I'm going to keep it that way for the rest of time. So.
Yeah, so this, for me at least, is something I actually worry about a lot. Partially because I have to keep playing video games, so I have, you know, things to talk about on this show. and I think for me, kind of the difficulty is, you know, I find myself increasingly kind of alienated from the like lack of quality and kind of the money grabbing from AAA games.
Mm-hmm.
However, I tend not to like the like five genres that indie games have decided they're allowed to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe I just stop playing games.
I think that there's always going to be, they're just, oh geez, sorry, whoa, a tab just blasted my ears with sound. Do you honestly think that just with the amount that is out there, that there'll just stop being anything for you?
I don't know, like I could see myself going to, for example, like, you know, maybe something adjacent, like a pen and paper,
mm-hmm.
You know, being kind of my jam or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely see what if, you know, the only company I can think of that's like consistently making hits for me is probably, you know, From Software.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for everything I've heard from about Sekiro is that it's basically, what if we took out all those things you like about our games?
There's stuff to like there. It's like there's enough of it to tempt you on, and then not enough to fulfill you. Yeah. I think about this, and you know, you identify a trend, you know, in games as a service coming, and that, you know, that feels like a problem to me. But primarily, you know, like in the past, I just have never gone for games with really strong online components, again, outside of Dark Souls, where it's really well integrated. So I see something like, you know, Battle Royale games or whatever, or loot box style games or whatever the current bugbear is, and, you know, watching it a little bit from afar and not necessarily getting involved with any of them, I always see the trend and then I see the backlash. You know, one year it's, you know, again, yeah, we've got a loot system and it's got boxes and random chance, and then they get up and announce like it's a revelation that, and no loot boxes this year. You know, stuff like that. Like there's almost always like this self-correction, and I think, you know, and who knows, maybe I could chart it out, but like I don't think that there has been any year, at least for the past 10, where fewer games came out one year that I was interested in than came out the previous year. And it's kind of from all over a broad swath, you know, like, and anytime I feel a measure of despair that something is not going to be, you know, like just like, oh yeah, like maybe things are moving on, all of a sudden Resident Evil 2 comes out and it's like something that A is made specifically for me, but is also a really, really good product.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of people like it and it sells. I think that there is, you know, inertia where things can push into really stupid and alienating directions, but there will be a center, and that center doesn't move necessarily as fast. You know, it doesn't move fast enough that I see it falling, and, you know, falling off of my particular countertop, you know, in the near future. So,
yeah, I think for me, some of it is, you know, I guess maybe one way of saying it is like I tend to like very, very exploitable like genres or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to want there to be some thought in them. So, you know, I tend to prefer, you know, action movies and action games and shooters and stuff like that. And those are the easiest games to make just, you know, to basically AAA eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that then you know, tends to be when I'm not interested in them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing that would make me like, can, you know, not buy your big games, AAA games, or whatever you want to say, you know, like, well, what would make you retire from non-indie games? Indie games are the majority of what I play. I just wouldn't buy anymore if there was no such thing as an offline, you know, as a non-online, other people need to create the fun for you experience.
Sure.
Just not the way I like to play with games. It stresses me out.
Like Portal 2 multiplayer?
Yeah, no. Still one of my crowning achievements, making somebody rage quit that game.
At least you haven't made anybody rage quit a Journey, have you?
No, not all as right. far as I can tell.
All right. So the mountain hasn't been climbed yet, more than one way.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you would like to participate in these multiplayer sections, look for the prompts to go up on our Facebook pages on Monday afternoon. Facebook page, rather. Facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about something that is happening in the world of games that is exciting to us. I'll do mine here really quickly. So Alan Wake is a horror game that was made by Remedy Entertainment, the people who did Max Payne, who recently did, Quantum Break, and are working on Control right now. It had a little bit of a complicated publishing history because they teamed up with Microsoft to put it out. And apparently those rights have been kind of languishing. Like Remedy has not been in control, pun intended, I guess, of Alan Wake as an intellectual property for basically ever. However, Remedy just recently, either today or yesterday, reacquired the rights to Alan Wake, which puts a bunch of things back on the table, such as a possible sequel, which they actually started developing before their relationship with Microsoft soured. Additionally, they are also working on and have had in development for quite some time an Alan Wake television show. And I think that Alan Wake as a game would be uniquely suited to working in that form.
Isn't that just Twin Peaks?
Maybe, you know.
See, but I feel like then how am I going to watch Twin Peaks inside my Twin Peaks?
You can just watch it all. The DVDs are cheap. Yeah, so I'm excited about this. We could be a few years away from this bearing any fruit that is publicly visible, but yeah, business moves. Let's see, David, what's going on with speedrunners?
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting, you know, a little bit of a fluff piece, but a lot of fun. So it's the story via a Imgur post of a guy who created his first game, or at least first game that he released to Steam. And it's a platformer that, you know, he realized the only way he could realistically, you know, make this work is to have the entire platformer be on a single screen.
This game looks really cool. I've seen it for a while.
Yeah, and so it, you know, it's a single screen, and kind of the goal is to get from one end to the other as quickly as possible. And the look of it's kind of has some like La Mulana vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both a little bit in terms of like the actual era, and then also it's set up as like a Pitfall, you know, kind of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And released on Steam was kind of, you know, a no-name game. However, apparently the speedrunner community, discovered it, and it kind of became this weird kind of cult hit with that community where they started getting together and developing strategies and, you know, trading best times and that sort of thing. And this post is him just kind of, documenting, kind of what that was like, and sort of his experience of, you know, intending this to be like an extremely difficult game, and then like it just being ripped apart by speedrunners, but like in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the interesting sort of gaps in the logic and that sort of thing they discovered. So yeah, it's one of those things where, I've kind of given the summary, but really it's something you've kind of got to read to get the, the actual experience of it. But, it's a lot of fun. It's really cool.
Yeah. Man, the speedrun community, it's like a large body of water, and anything that you put that body of water up against, the collective pressure is going to find the leaks.
And it's like his second post, image in the post is a picture of like a swarm of ants taking down a praying mantis.
Yeah. Well, and just this past week, Summer Games Done Quick, it was a thing. People really like watching that. I like watching highlights of it, but they broke their fundraising goal or their fundraising records again. So it's just another cool speedrunning related thing. I want to check out this game. I read about it existing. I thought, yeah, that looks fun. And then I didn't do anything. One screen platformer. Yeah, this dev seems to have a really good attitude about it.
Yeah.
I wonder how this experience will change the next thing they make.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially because, they didn't explicitly say this, but the vibe I got was that this was at least somewhat a hobby project. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, like, will this maybe cause them to, like, actually, I think it's very possible that if this hadn't happened, they might never have made another thing, just because, that might not have been what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if maybe this will kind of catapult them to, getting into this more full time, or maybe they already are.
Yeah.
Another thing, just in the patented cool, this is a thing that will exist category, is it's been announced that Nazi Zombie Army 2 is going to be a thing using the Sniper Elite 4 engine.
Okay.
So, this is basically a game that, is built off of Sniper Elite. It's... four-player co-op, whereas the name suggests you're fighting a, zombie army. And, it's a big... Greg and Jala have been playing the original one through a lot. It's Well, at least if you're Greg, the sniper mechanics really change up the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you're... me and Jala, then you just run around getting chased by zombies and like chucking explosives and kicking things.
just keeping the line of sight open.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Someone's got to be the bait, and apparently it's me.
Nice.
But yeah, so it looks like they're kind of doing sort of what happened actually with the Nazi zombie modes in not Battlefield,
Call of Duty
games, where they're kind of leaning in, and this time around it's actually going to be a fully fledged game with much more different classes and customization, those sorts of things, which seems like a lot of fun.
Do you know when that's coming out, David?
I do not. I just saw one of the streamers I like was kind of doing a promo for it.
Cool. And Ben, what's going on with them board games?
So, holy crap, I didn't realize this until today. They're putting out Gloomhaven as an online game. This is pretty awesome. So Gloomhaven's a really big board game. It's the number one game on the Board Game Geek. It's also just physically a really big board game. There's a lot of games
so
there.
Big.
It's a weird thing where after you unpack the game, you cannot put it back in the same box that it came out of. It's like a weird House of Leaves thing going on there. Yeah. But no, this is really
awesome.
Do
parts of the game inflate?
It's just everything is very tightly packed into cardboard cutouts. And so, yeah, anyway, I don't know. I played this game with some friends for the last, like, maybe 2 or 3 years. We maybe got a third of the way through the game, and we put probably about 80 or 90 hours into the game, probably. It's an awesome game. It's kind of like it is so much better suited as a video game than a board game, so that's why I'm very excited about this. Because the parts that were most tedious about the board game is you have to, like, set up the map, set up where the enemies are, handle, like, their movement and everything like that, and, like, the damage they take and stuff like that. All that's taken care of you if it's in a video game form. So I'm going to try and get the gang back together and play this online with them. Yeah, super excited, especially at the prospect of possibly being able to beat the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a big relief not to have to worry about the bookkeeping.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Gloomhaven, early access on the 17th.
I forgot to mention those dates and the fact that it was early access. I don't know when the full-fledged game will come out, so we'll see.
I mean, the game is there, the early access. I don't know why they would have that on early access, but yeah, who knows.
Yep.
Cool. Well, how do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 290. We really appreciate you making the time. You know the stuff to do, like we mentioned at the start, duckfeed.tv/duckfest. Tickets are $15 August 31st in Portland, Oregon for a day of some Duckfeed podcasts.
And an after party.
Yes, at Quarter World, our stalwart. That is a cool place. I think we've done 4 after show events there, something like that. Always a good time. Additionally, usual stuff for the show. If you can spread the word on social media, tell your friends about this, and just plain old come back next week. We'd really appreciate. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been David Meismith. I know you can't watch me. Don't be creepy.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
Cool. And stick around for some titles.
So, okay. I'm a little bit of a weird thing. I've got two, one of which I said, and one of which no one actually said, but in this many words, but I kind of like the concept.
Okay.
One was Meat Warlord. And then the other one, I don't know if anyone actually said this in so many words, but just a 1,000-year spoiler.
Can you see the 1,000-year spoiler window?
Okay, yeah.
Because that relates. Either there was something about statute of limitations or whatever on there after 1,000 years.
Exactly.
How about you, Ben?
I also have Meat Warlord, coincidentally enough. Okay. And then tied with that one I have, I'm not going to eat my cat. The quote you said.
So I have a reverse Children of Men. I'm going to veto that because we just did reverse Hearthstoning. But Ben, you said that and I liked it. Mm-hmm. I have between Hobbes, Malthus and Nietzsche. And then I've got, good. And then I've got dry casting.
Ooh.
Meat Warlord wins by votes.
As meat warlords typically do.
Yes. Yeah. Meat warlords known for rallying.
For known their democratic leanings.
They rule by fear and meat.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm going to go. I'm sleepy.
Yeah. Everybody have a good 4th of July.
Yeah, you too. Be safe. Yeah. Happy travels, Ben.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys.
Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Bye.